tucked in between the foothills of Kentucky and Virginia is a world of food rooted in, well, roots, among other things. Our next guest says Appalachian cuisine can trace its origins to subsistence and survival, maximizing an ingredient's potential and its lifespan. That includes techniques like pickling, fermenting, and preserving that sustain the region and gave us recipes that reflect seasons that have been passed down for generations. On this week's edition of Food Friday, our guest tells us more about Appalachian food culture. Lauren McDuffie is a freelance writer, food stylist, and photographer. Her new book is called Smoke, Roots, Mountain Harvest, Recipes and Stories from My Appalachian Home. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, how would you describe Appalachian food? And this, it covers a lot of ground in a lot of places, I know, but how would you describe it to someone not familiar with the region?
This is, you're right, it is a big question. It's beautifully diverse and I think much richer than a lot of people realize. It's grounded so much in story. That was one of my biggest takeaways after spending a year really researching and diving into this cookbook project, is so much of what makes Appalachian food Appalachian are just the stories behind the ingredients and the people who have turned the recipes into what they are and what make them so special.
And a lot of your recipes derive, at least in part, from your own grandmother's cooking. You say she was the best cook you ever witnessed. Can you talk about how the recipes and stories got passed on from her?
Sure. So this is my mom's mother, and she was born in Rough Creek, Kentucky, which is in the southern part of the state, sort of in the foothills or the knobs of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And she really was kind of a true blue Appalachian cook, and specifically baker. I have such fond memories of spending time in the kitchen, and she really gave me a love of baking, and she showed me how to use an ingredient to the fullest, to use every little part of something, and gave me a very strong appreciation for that from a really early age. And I actually still have the old recipe box filled with handwritten, you know, index cards tucked away in my kitchen. And she gave that to my mother, and my mom passed it on to me after I got married. So I literally have those recipes passed on, and I keep them out where I can see them at all times because they're really nice to have.
And now you write that you have moved. You're in Indianapolis area, I think. Is there a food, is there a dish that just takes you back there?
Ooh, gosh. I think there probably are several. I make a lot of pimento cheese. Honestly, I do. That's one of my favorite things. I think I make it for every party to which I am invited or every event. I made it like a triple batch of it last week. That's something that's a big recipe in my family. I don't think my family has any gathering where that's not present. But I do. I love fried chicken as well. My grandmother made a really mean fried chicken, and she actually grew up right next to Colonel Sanders himself in Kentucky.
Oh, the Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, the Colonel Sanders.
Wow.
I don't know that she ever got his secret recipe, but hers was pretty darn good. So yeah, that's a nostalgic one for me.
Now, we mentioned a lot of the recipes involve some kind of preserved food, and you're right, that's a key to a lot of cooking, the pickling, fermenting, yeah, canning. Can you talk
Absolutely.
About why that's such a central part of the cuisine?
Well, from what I understand, I mean, Appalachia is in the northern part of the South. So unlike some other regions in the American South, it experiences a winter much more so. And that cold time of year, I think, required that of home cooks everywhere, the putting up of food, the fermenting, canning, curing, pickling, drying out of things so that it would last, and really stretching ingredients throughout those cold months so that you would have something to eat. So it's, again, it's that survivalist mentality and the wasting nothing that really lies, I think, at the heart of this kind of cuisine that I appreciate so much.
Yeah, you write, even at a restaurant you were stopping at, there was a dish that surprised you. I can't remember what it was. Something with peaches in a savory
yes.
thing. And the
trout.
Yeah, and the yep. wait staff said something like, waste not, want not, right?
Absolutely. My mom, she says those words all the time. So did her mother. So, yeah, if I had a dime for every time I heard those.
We are talking about Appalachian cuisine in this edition of Food Friday. Lauren McDuffie is with us. Her new book is called Smoke, Roots, Mountain Harvest. And you give a list of ingredients we want to have handy. One surprised me, because this is big, big thing grown here in Wisconsin, ginseng. Can you talk about how that fits into cooking in the region?
You know, ginseng is actually something that I have not done a lot of cooking with myself. But when I was speaking with people, I traveled back to Kentucky and Virginia throughout the year that I really spent researching and writing this book. And that was an ingredient that was cited, I think every single time I met with someone or at a farmer's market and I would speak with local people, and it's a really prized ingredient. People make a real income and a lifestyle out of hunting for ginseng. It's, I think you can fetch a pretty penny. And there are some medicinal qualities, I think, associated with it. So I think in terms of Appalachian like folk medicine, you would see that kind of attached to the whole ginseng culture. So I found that fairly interesting.
I wanted to ask about the approach you take to recipes and smoke, roots, mountain harvest. Mm-hmm. You write, this is not an encyclopedia of authentic foods from all across the region. So what were you setting out to do here?
So my goal with this book, I think more than it being an educational book, I was really trying to create something evocative of place. This book really is a fusion cookbook. I work today as a professional recipe developer, food writer, and blogger, and I really wanted to kind of marry the foods and ingredients that I love and I work with today on a daily basis with some of the really iconic ingredients and recipes and techniques and tricks and stories from this place that I grew up, that I love and wanted to honor with this book. So it's truly a blending of my own personal interests and stories. So yeah, it is not an authentic down-home Appalachian cookbook. Those have been done brilliantly by many other cookbook authors. So I wanted to offer something a little bit different.
Well, that's a perfect setup for the recipe you shared with us today. miso bacon moonshine mussels. Now, we've got this up, by the way, at WPR.org/Food Friday if anyone wants to give this a try. Talk us through this recipe and what you're bringing together here.
Yeah, it's an interesting sounding conglomeration of ingredients, but this one came together really well. It was truly an exercise in trial and error cooking. Mussels are something, I mean, clearly that's not a traditional Appalachian ingredient, but it's something I do make all the time. I love them. I love how they seem like they might be fussy and very tricky and maybe fancy, but they could not be simpler or quicker to make. So I love them for that reason. I knew I wanted them to be in the book, and I have this chapter on moonshine. And mussels are typically prepared with wine. So I swapped in some moonshine and I added a little bit of smoky bacon, which, and I keep miso around a lot. It's an ingredient that I think you can find a lot more these days in just a traditional big box supermarket. Mine here in Indianapolis carries it. So I added a little bit when I was playing around being the kitchen chemist, and that salty kind of fermented backbone that you get from the miso really plays nicely with the sharpness of the moonshine and that smoky bacon.
And this is, and I imagine you're the photographer. It looks beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. It looks amazing. But the moonshine in cooking, you've got also a chapter, I think, using bourbon. And it's this actually matches up well. I mean, there's a lot of micro distilleries in Wisconsin and around the country. So you can really experiment with some local ingredients in these.
That's right. Yeah, that's the idea.
We continue our Food Friday conversation with Lauren McDuffie. Her new book is called Smoke, Roots, Mountain Harvest, Recipes and Stories from My Appalachian Home. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a family history of cooking from the region, the mountain regions of Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio? Is there more like you'd like to learn about this cuisine? And do you use any kind of pickled, fermented, or preserved ingredients? Do you can things yourself and then use them in recipes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren, you organize your book into seasons rather than chapters, and you're a big fan of seasonal cooking. Talk about seasonal cooking and Appalachian food.
Seasonal cooking is something that I just do naturally because to me it just sort of makes sense. Food tastes the best when it's in season, when it's picked at the peak of freshness, and it also tends to be more affordable. It's the way my mom is a very seasonal cook and eater, so I think she sort of instilled that appreciation in me, and my grandmother was the same way. So it's kind of a monkey see, monkey do. But yeah, I thought it made the most sense for me. In terms of the organization of this book, to do it seasonally, because I really wanted this book to be a storytelling experience. So I started with the seasons, and then I thought, okay, what do I love most about the seasons and the fall, and what do I love about the fall back home? And then I let the foods tell the stories from there. The recipes just sort of came from that.
And it's early June. What has you excited right now?
Oh, it's sort of early summer, and I can't help it. I might be rushing the season a little bit, but I just look forward to corn and tomatoes so much, especially being here in Indiana. So I just, yeah, it's my favorite time of year, I think, food-wise.
I can't wait for corn on the cob either. And you had a beautiful-looking, I think it was a grilled corn on the cob. What's the secret?
You know, this is kind of a riff on the Mexican street corn, elote. It was a little bit inspired by that. So I brush my corn with some coconut cream, and I sprinkle a little bit of salty roasted peanuts and some cilantro on top. So it's a little bit different, but the flavors are really nice.
We've got an email from Grant. Grant wants to know if there are any traditional breads from the region. I saw a bunch of quick breads anyway. I don't remember if I saw yeasted bread amongst the recipes.
You know, I think yeasted breads for sure, just traditional country bread, I would say country-style white breads, wheat breads. But quick bread is something that I personally experienced growing up. My grandmother's sister, I remember her having quick breads out on the countertop all the time, cooling. And so that's what I have in my book. I have a quick bread of sorts, a sweet one made with sorghum kind of as its base for a sweetener. So for me, that's what I think of when I think of breads from the Appalachian region, because that's what I experienced, I think, the most.
I've never cooked with sorghum. I know we've got at least one Food Friday fan who is a sorghum fan. She's called in the past. What does that do for a bread?
So sorghum, I like to describe it kind of as it's like a combination of honey and molasses, really. It's got a really lovely caramel backbone to it. And I think Appalachia didn't have the prevalence of sugarcane that maybe the rest of the South did. So you'll find other natural sweeteners used in the cuisine from this region, and sorghum being one of them. And so it's not as easy to find, but I always say if you can't find it, I like to kind of do a 50-50 mixture of honey and molasses, and that'll work just fine. And it adds a really lovely caramel note to, in this case, the quick bread.
And staying with the bread theme, I saw, and I just flipped to the right page, a cornbread, a black
cornbread.
Grape and jalapeno skillet cornbread, which is looking pretty
That's
good, too.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, tell us about that one. Grapes in my cornbread?
Grapes are a really versatile ingredient, I have found. I think you can roast them, you can fry them, and they work well both on the savory and sweet spectrum. And this cornbread in my book, kind of, I say it waves the white flag in between the sweet cornbread and a savory, which you'll find people who really advocate for both corners. And I personally kind of like something in the middle. And so my cornbread, while it does have a little bit of honey and sugar in the actual batter, it gets some of its sweetness from those grapes and from the honey butter that you let melt down over it when it's out of the oven. So the grapes serve that really nice purpose. Plus, they counterbalance the jalapenos as well.
Oh, that's nice. And the one gripe I hear sometimes about cornbread is people think it's too dry. Do the grapes help give that moisture there?
They do. They actually do. That's a really good point. They lend some additional moisture to the whole thing when it's said and done. And the bake time is just a little bit longer because of the grapes. But yeah, I think they help that out a bit.
We are talking to the author of the new book, Smoke, Roots, Mountain Harvest, Recipes and Stories Inspired by My Appalachian Home. Lauren McDuffie is with us for this week's edition of Food Friday. If you have a question or an experience to share with us, or maybe part of your own family story, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and find a recipe from Lauren over at WPR.org/Food Friday, along with a whole bunch of other recipes. Are there a lot of misconceptions, Lauren, about food from the Appalachian region that you run into?
I think so. I think it is a very heavily kind of stereotyped and pigeonholed region. It kind of gets pegged as one very sort of unilateral thing. And there's so much more. There's a real richness to the food from this part of the world that I gained an even greater appreciation for as I worked on this book. And that was sort of a goal of mine, was to show people that there's a bit more to the area than maybe they realized. Food-wise especially, it's much more culturally diverse, I think, than people realize.
Yeah, what kind of variations? You've got a little section on Kentucky in particular. What kind of variations might we see if we move from, say, Virginia area to Kentucky area?
Honestly, I think a lot of the variations come from the stories behind the food. Mm. That's one of the things that I learned the most as I was working on this is some of the what makes an Appalachian recipe or ingredient specifically Appalachian or even regional or specific to its state is the story behind it and the people who are making it. So depending on who you're talking to and where you are, you might get an entirely different story.
And you're doing a fusion with your recipes, but in a way, I mean, this is a regional food that's already drawing from a lot of influences, right?
I think so. Yes, absolutely.
Let's bring on a caller now. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Hi there. This is so much fun. It's making me miss home. I want to hear your guest's best ramps recipe, and if it's got pimento cheese spread on it, even better.
Well, Martha, before I let Lauren answer that, you're in Menominee now, but where is the home that's reminding you of?
I grew up in Virginia and North Carolina and West Virginia, all around that area. My dad, you know, traveled around. So
okay, and did you bring a lot of the food, the cooking with you here?
Oh, you bet.
All right. We'll bring it down to the studio sometime, Martha. Okay, hit us with some good ramps, Lauren, because I'm still getting some from my CSA here, so we got ramps in Wisconsin.
Oh, you're lucky. That's good. Yeah, their growing season's really short, so if you can get them, you got to get them while you can. I love ramps. I really love any member of the Allium family. Any kind of oniony bite that they can lend a recipe is great. I have one in my book, actually. It's a really simple recipe. It's a stovetop toast with truffled ramp butter. So basically, it's how I like to make toast in the morning. Instead of using a toaster, I grill up my bread on the stovetop just in a lot of butter, and it preserves kind of the softness and the chewiness of the bread on the inside, and the outside gets crusty and buttery, and then I slather on a homemade ramp butter, and I like to throw my fresh ramps in some butter right when I get them, because it's a really nice way to preserve it and kind of stretch the lifespan of those ramps.
Thanks a lot for that call, Martha. Now, I hope nobody hates me for this. I basically just cook ramps. I'll sub them in for onions and cook them similarly. Am I guilty of rampicide? Lauren, should I be doing them different?
I think you should do them. I think you should do it however you like. Honestly, rampicide. I'm going to use that. That was pretty good.
Yeah, but is there like an ideal way you think to cook them? I worry that I'm kind of overkilling them.
You know, I think, I don't know if there's an ideal way, but I think keeping and preserving, kind of honoring their freshness, is probably the way to go. I mean, I just use a pair of kitchen shears and I snip them into salads on a daily basis. So that way, they don't see any heat. They don't need to. I mean, a little does go a long way. They are fairly strong. But I think just letting them kind of shine in an application where they're not even cooked at all is probably ideal. So yeah, I do a lot of salads for that very reason.
And Lauren, I want to look a little bit ahead in the summer. We have kind of like, we always had a crisis stage in Wisconsin of there's so much zucchini, it's gonna take over. What kind of things, I saw at least one summer squash recipe in there. What kind of things do you like to do to use that zucchini?
So I do have a recipe in this book for, it's really simple. It's a lovely shaved zucchini salad. So basically, I just take my vegetable peeler and I shave just fresh, thick strands of zucchini, almost like pappardelle noodles. And then I have a simple vinaigrette, the pickled pepper vinaigrette over top. And I serve that so regularly during the summer. It's a wonderful way to use up that zucchini. And I also like to make a summer squash butter, essentially. It's kind of like a savory, like an apple butter, only a savory version. So it's, and I can see them turned into like dips, like a hummus using squash. Yeah, I think those are things that you'll see in my kitchen pretty regularly throughout the summer.
Well, we're closing on the end of Food Friday. Lauren, can you leave us with maybe a dessert recipe or two that were inspired by your childhood?
So when I think of summer, and in my childhood in particular, I think a lot of peaches and stone fruits. We'd sit out on the front porch and eat a lot of peaches out of a brown paper bag, my brother and I. And I have a recipe in my book for just a simple grilled stone fruits. And I have a cream cheese ice cream and a sweet jasmine syrup that you drizzle over the top. And it's just a really lovely way to highlight the sweetness and the beauty of those summertime stone fruits.
And what's the secret? I've grilled pears and apples. I don't think I've ever tried grilling peaches. What's the secret to a good grilled peach?
You know, I think less is more. They're so delicious as they are that you just kind of, I'd say lower and slow, because the sugar content can cause some burning if you don't watch. So just lower heat, let them go for a little while, and they'll do their thing. They don't require much. That's the beauty.
Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Lauren McDuffie. She joined us on this week's edition of Food Friday. We've been talking about Appalachian cooking and her new cookbook. It's called Smoke, Roots, Mountain Harvest, Recipes and Stories from My Appalachian Home. Now, we've got a recipe from her online today. Like she said, it's a fusion recipe. We've got that at WPR.org/Food Friday. The recipe is miso bacon moonshine mussels. I never really made mussels, but this sounds like a great way to have them. Let us know if you download that and try it out yourself. And while you're there, you can check out our whole archive of Food Friday recipes. We've been at this for a while with Food Fridays. You can find lots and lots of recipes from over the years there, enough to keep you cooking for the whole summer. Find it all right now over at WPR.org/Food Friday.